Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday. Boom!
This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in. Let's go!
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up!
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
And part three of my interview with James Ray, we pick up where we left off after part two, discussing James's release from prison. And where do you go when you get out of prison? You're prisoner number 267-263. What's next? The next step, first days, first months, and how do you pick up the pieces and get on with your new life? So here we go, part three of my interview with James Ray.
What were your first few days out of prison like? Did you go back to California? Did you go with family? I mean, where do you begin to start the rest of your life?
Well, I was on parole for 3 months, so I couldn't leave Arizona. And it's such an interesting study in human psychology, Sam, because I was running a $10 million business. You know, you might be aware, my company was awarded the Inc. 500 in 2009, and which I'm really grateful, and that meant a lot to me. I mean, for an entrepreneur to come out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, an insecure, skinny kid, and to be able to achieve that, it was something way beyond I ever even could dream when I was, you know, younger. And so I went from running a $10 million business and having everybody, for the most part, coming to me. I mean, there's a lot of hubris that comes from being the go-to guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 143 different countries, we put push pins on the map. We had a map of the world in our office. And every time someone from a different country would come or whatever, we'd put a push pin, and it was part of our accomplishment board. And, you know, they're all coming to say, how can I grow my business? How can I live a better life? And you start to kind of think, you know, hey, I got the answers.
Yeah.
And then the lawyers are vying for your attention, and the accountants and everybody is, and the bankers are licking your boots, and, you know, all this stuff. And I went from that to strip searched and being a number, 267-823. You know, I'll remember that number for the rest of my life, because you're not a human being in prison, really. You're a number.
Right.
You're property of the state. And they tell you that you are property. Right. And so if you can imagine the extremes there. So now I come out after 2 years of being property, being a number. And, you know, basically you don't think. You know, you stand up, you sit down, you go to your cell, you get in line, you go to the chow hall, you know, you're told everything. And now I come out, and it's a really great question, Sam. Where do you start? My driver's license was expired. I didn't want an Arizona driver's license because I didn't want anything to do with Arizona, quite frankly. You know,
yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, and I'm over that now. I'm you know, I God bless Arizona. Arizona is one of my greatest teachers. It taught me through pain. But I'm going there for an event in October. I'm holding an event there, believe it or not. Initially I was like, man, you know, I don't want an Arizona license. And, you know, how long has it been since I've taken a driving test? Seriously, I have to take a written test. I mean, who remembers how far you brake before when you see the red lights in front of you? You know, I mean, all of those little things And it was frightening to go from master of the universe to master of nothing, and to get out and, you know, to notice how quickly we become conditioned in compliance. That's frightening. It, you know, 2 years is not that long, really. But, you know, where do I start? Well, my brother got me a condo, and he rented a condo for me for 90 days. And it was heaven, Sam, because I literally, I was 24/7 in a dorm room at the final. I got moved a lot, and finally I ended up, you know, on a minimum security yard in a dorm room with 30 other grown men, and the vast majority of them were shooting up heroin 7 days a week, 24/7, 6 feet away from me, mainlining, you know. Yeah, and we were in the middle of the desert. It was 130 degrees outside, no air conditioning, a swamp cooler. And I mean, it was miserable. And you put the average age in prison, at least in Arizona, is about 35. So you and I are old guys, you know. Yeah. And you know, you think about a 35-year-old man full of testosterone, full of anger, you know, and you put them, 30 of them, in a dorm room with no air conditioner, 130 degrees, heroin, and I get more. And it's a a boiling cauldron,
yeah,
you know, literally and metaphorically. And so I did not experience 1 hour of silence or solitude that entire time. I would have much rather stayed in solitary confinement for me, you know. So when I got out in Arizona and got my own place for 90 days, and after the family, you know, they all joined me there. And my girlfriend, who I've been with for 7 years, you know, came to visit. But she had to work and go back to California. My family went back to California. And so now here I am in this condo in Phoenix. And it was like heaven, you know. It was heaven.
Yeah.
But I also realized that because, I mean, this whole situation floored me financially, you know, floored me.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I realized, hey, I don't have a whole lot of time to bask in the solitude and the silence. I got to get busy. I got to get my business back together. I got to decide what I'm going to do with my life.
Did you ever have a thought that says, you know what, I can't go back to what I was doing, or was it the opposite? I'm going to come back and try even harder to make a difference. Which one was it at first? Go ahead.
No, it's a really great question, and the answer is both. I, you know, interestingly enough, just literally weeks before the accident happened in Sedona, I was offered a contract for my own TV show, and that, you know, I had a manager who was formerly with. He was with William Morris, and they were my agency at the time. And he stayed with me, stuck with me, you know, as a friend. Now we're great friends. We don't have contracts anymore, but we're still great friends. And when things, you know, first started happening, I said to him, when this is all over, I don't want anything to do with personal development anymore. I want to change careers. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, you know, I kind of like to host my own TV show. I said, I'd like to be a host. I said, you know, that guy on Dancing with the Stars, you know, that's I can do that job, you know, and, you know, I bet he goes home at night and sleeps in his own bed. And all he has to do is say a few, you know, he said, okay, all right. If that, you know, well, now fast forward and I'm out. And I realize, Sam, that that's not why I'm here. It's not why I'm here. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot right with that. But it's not why I'm here. And that's part of what I, again, talk with entrepreneurs about, is find your innate abilities and align them with your unique purpose. And then let's build a business from there. Because one of the things I find consistently, Sam, and maybe you've experienced this as well, is, you know, people are like, oh, I'm gonna start marketing on the internet. Yeah. Well, why? Well, because you can make a lot of money, and so-and-so makes this million and that million. And no, wrong answer. You know, or I'm going to go into network marketing. Well, really? Why? Well, because you can make a lot of money. No, wrong answer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm going to become a speaker and an author. And so there's this whole dreamer marketplace, if you will, that romanticizes, and there's a market to go after there, and a lot of people do. Oh, I'm going to teach you how to, I've got a New York Times bestseller, and I'm going to teach you how to be an author and a speaker just like me. Just pay me X amount of money.
Yeah.
Well, what I know, Sam, is that not everybody has the innate ability to do that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and we can romanticize and dream about it. Now, here's something interesting for your daughters. There was a survey done recently of young adults on their way, you know, to their adulthood and teenagers. And the question was asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Now, when you and I grew up there, you know, there was a whole host of things that we thought were really cool to become. But you know what the overarching answer was to that question? What do you want to be when you grow up?
What's that?
Famous.
Famous. All right.
Famous. Well, famous for what?
Right.
You know, I mean, without naming names, so-and-so does a sex video and now she's famous.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Is that what you want to be?
Yeah.
And so I really believe we've lost our way as entrepreneurs, as people, as a world, because it's not about I'm going into network marketing to make money. I'm going to become an author and a speaker to make money. I'm going to be a network marketer. You know, none of those things to make money. Life is not about money. It's about meaning. And I'm not saying money is not important. Of course it is. We all have to have it. But if you study, you know, the top achieving entrepreneurs, and I've coached many multimillionaires, and I've shared the stage with billionaires. And what I can tell you consistently is that none of them who reach their own ultimate human performance got there by pursuing the money. And some people want to disagree with me on that, but it's true nonetheless. It's true nonetheless. I mean, look at Jobs. He said, I mean, I can quote so many of these guys. You know, Jobs said, success is hard. Find something that you love.
Yeah.
Right? Mark Cuban says, find something that you love and build a business with it. You might be successful. And even if you're not, you're doing what you love.
True.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I could go on. But you know who Sheldon Adelson is?
Well, I know only because I watched the video on your homepage at jamesray.com. So, yeah.
Did I talk about him?
You did. You said he's not as well known as Trump or Branson, but he's worth both of them combined.
Yeah, he is. He's worth more than them combined. So you heard me tell, I put out a lot of videos and stuff, but I had dinner with him several years ago in Vegas. And for the listener, I've invested, you know, over 30 years of my life studying and probing the science and the psychology and the strategies of ultimate human performance. And when I'm with these people, man, I am just like a sponge. And so Sheldon is sitting to my left, and his wife, you know, half his age, is sitting to his left, God bless him. And I said to Sheldon, I said, hey, man, what's the most important keys to success in your opinion? He didn't say working out like Branson did, by the way. But he said, he set his fork down and he said, James, find something that you love. Become really good at it. And then work really hard. He picked his fork back up and went back to his dinner. And so point, you know, I just quoted three billionaires who started with find something that you love. And this is a long answer to your question, Sam. My apologies.
No, it's good, man. It's good.
But back to why did I come back to here? Well, you know, I was doing an event in Phoenix, of all places, in February, and there was a reporter in the office who had skewered me during the whole situation. He was in the audience, yeah, taking copious notes. And when it came time for Q&A, which I call open frame, he raised his hand and he got up on mic and he said, James, you know, given all the challenges you've been through, why did you come back? Why didn't you go do something different? same question you asked me, basically. And I said, you know what, Matt? I said, easy answer. Three words. Clarity of purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, I really believe, Sam, that when you have clarity of purpose, which unfortunately few people do, that you don't quit. You know, even if it would be easier to do so, you just don't quit because you know why you're here. You know, you're a spiritual man. Maybe some of your listeners are, you know, whether you are or whether you aren't. I have a belief that there's a creative source in this universe that gives us a purpose and to fulfill. And that when we don't fulfill it, there's a void in the universal plan. And that sounds a little mystical, but nonetheless, I think we all have a unique purpose. We have abilities that we've come in with. And this is science. I mean, Howard Gardner, who I quoted earlier from Harvard, no less, has said this is the case. We come in with certain abilities. Traditional school system doesn't encourage us to develop those and certainly doesn't encourage us to even find them. You know, but when we do find them and we align those with our unique purpose, then we don't quit because we're home. We're home. I mean, that we know why we're here and what we're here to do.
Thank you for listening to the Every Day is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter at Sam Crowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use hashtag Every Day is Saturday.